Hey folks, today's episode is brought to you by Bloomsbury, publisher of the book Long Live the Tribe of Fatherless Girls. It's a memoir by T. Keira Madden. Lauren Groff calls it frank and funny and powerful and surprising and utterly gorgeous debut. It is the official March pick of the Nervous Breakdown Book Club. Long Live the Tribe of Fatherless Girls by T. Keira Madden, available now from Bloomsbury.
You are not alone. You have found other people.
You and I have a friend in common.
Every stupid thing that a writer could do, I've done.
I think it's really beautiful.
Jeez, dude, what a struggle, you know?
It was incredible. You know, it was like your head exploded seeing what was really there.
And now here's your host, Brad Listy.
Just one person at just one time.
Hi, everybody. How's it going? Right. Welcome to the Other People podcast. I'm Brad Listy, and I'm in Los Angeles. It's nice to be with you. I have Steve Anwell on the program. He's got a new novel out on Tyrant Books. It is called Welfare. He came over a while back. He's a Canadian author. And he was in Los Angeles. He came over in the middle of the day with a six-pack of beer. I think he smoked a joint in my backyard before we got started. So we had a great talk. That's coming up in just a moment. I do have a question from a listener. His name's Justin. He says, Brad, my brother wants to marry the wrong person. What do I do? So, I'm not great at giving advice. I think that people have to have the room to make their mistakes, especially when it comes to relationship stuff. There's only so much you can do, but if it's really the wrong person and you really think he's headed for disaster and you're his brother, there is, I think, a way to express your concern without damaging the relationship with your brother. You know, it's delicate. You have to choose your words wisely. I don't know if you write something down. I don't know if you try to say it. The danger in saying something face to face is that you'll get emotional and you'll get carried away. If you write something, at least you can edit yourself and contain yourself and control tone. I have a friend who did this with his best friend. Kind of like a day before the wedding, like pulled him aside and was like, I don't know if you want to do this. It's tough. It's tough when people, you know, when you care about somebody and you can see them making a mistake, like a very consequential mistake, but it's also like personal. It's their business. And, you know, you have to have some humility. Maybe you're wrong. Maybe you're not seeing something. Maybe this is going to actually work. Or not. I mean, I don't know. I'd have to have more context. But if you feel really strongly about it, and you're his brother, I think there's a way to express your concern gently, while also acknowledging that it's his call and you will support him, you know, whatever he does. I think that would be the approach I would take. So that way you can at least live with yourself. Like, look, you expressed your concern, and then a year or two or three or five or whatever it is from now, when the relationship is fully imploded, your brother will look to you and be like, dude, you tried to tell me. And you'll be like, yes, I did. So that's my advice to you, Justin. And whether you do it in person or in writing, you know, I guess if you do it in person and you say it, there's no paper trail. Because what if the relationship does work? They have like seven kids, they're blissfully happy, and then one day, you know, some letter that you wrote or some email about how much you think your brother's wife is not right for him. Or I don't know, it might be a husband. I don't know what your brother's orientation is, but you see what I'm saying. You have to make that call on your own. I wish you luck. This podcast is offered freely. More than 570 episodes, all available for free. You can listen online. You can listen via the free Other People app. You can listen via any like podcatcher, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, whatever it is. It's all free. If you would like to support the show, your support makes a difference. You can do that at patreon.com/otherpplpod.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
My guest today is Steve Anwell. His new novel, his debut, is available now from Tyrant Books. It is called Welfare, and it has been generating rave reviews. I'm very happy to have had the chance to sit down with Steve just as his career gets underway. So here's my conversation with Steve Anwell.
What do you think of it?
I think you have this European idea of it. Right?
I love
where
it.
Everybody sits on a cafe or something. It's like Sartre or whatever.
It's like the closest thing in North America to like Europe.
Yeah, 100%. But I think people have the wrong idea about it. It's more European in the watch your money, people are going to scam you style. Do you know what I mean? Everybody's out to get you.
Really?
That's how I kind of feel. It's like it's a scam city for sure.
How long have you been there?
My wife and I moved there, I think, 6.5 years ago, maybe now.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I went for work. Because we're living in Toronto. And I got fired.
From what?
Screen printing is what I do for like a profession. So I like screen print t-shirts normally. So I got fired again at from the shop. And I was like, well, fuck it. You know, like we can't afford to live in Toronto anymore because it's a lot like Los Angeles. It's very expensive. So I just went on Craigslist and I found a job in Montreal and we moved.
Doing screen printing?
Yeah. I keep doing the same thing because it's easy for me if I'm good at it enough to get jobs in shops. I can always support myself. It's not the greatest career in the world, I won't lie to you. But
it's,
you
know, steady.
It's always steady, yeah, I'll give you that. And, you know, it puts food on the table. And I don't mind it. It's fun. Like, I just, sometimes it's not, you know, like any job, I guess, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, having something to pay the bills that doesn't make you completely fucking insane. There's something to be said for that.
Yeah, for sure. It's super cool. I wouldn't want to, like, there's a lot of things out there that I've done. I'm glad I don't wash cars anymore. I'm glad I don't clean toilets anymore. So it's like screen printing. When I first got that job too, like I've been doing it probably for like 16 years, I think. And I was like, fuck yeah, I can do this. You know, like this is better than all the other jobs I've had. So
what do you even do? I'm trying to imagine, like, do you have to make the cutouts for the...
It's not that bad anymore. You're not like cutting Ruby Lift by hand. You do everything in Illustrator that way. And then you make a transparency and then you just put it on the film. You shoot that in like an exposure unit. Wash out the emulsion that doesn't cure. You've got your screen, and then you put it in, you start printing.
I understood like 10% of what you just said.
Oh, sorry. So you have to make like, transparency is like, say I had like, say my shirt wanted to say like my name, or like Tyrant Books, okay?
Yeah.
So I'd do black on like a clear transparency and say Tyrant Books in the font. I'd print it out on this, like it's clear, and you just have the black, right? So then you'd put it on upside down on this film or on the screen printing like screen.
Yeah.
Then you put it into this machine that's UV light.
Okay.
You turn it on and it goes for like, let's say 2 to 5 minutes. That exposes everything without the black. So the black keeps, you see whatever is black is left sort of. So then you put it into like this like washout station. You wash it with a pressure washer. Everything that was black washes out. So then you're left with whatever your design is.
Did you make these? Because I've seen you, there's some t-shirts for your book.
Like, yeah,
you made those.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's a useful skill if you're trying to promote a book. You can make some screen prints.
100%. Like I have a lot more merchandise. Like I try to think of me as a writer more as like a punk band. Like what would they show up with? Do you know what I mean? I have shirts and prints and stuff, you know?
I'm going to get you to make me some Other People t-shirts.
Cool, I'll do that for sure, man.
Can you do that?
Yeah, 100%. Super easy. Your logo's really easy, too. It's like one color, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's no problem.
All right.
Cool.
Look at you. You got a side hustle.
Yeah, right? Always, man. I don't like going to work, dude. So, like, because I also print from home, too. So, like, I have, like, a big dryer in my apartment, and, like...
Can you do graffiti this way, too?
You know what? I've always thought of doing that, because, like, stencil making, right?
Yeah.
So, like, because I always thought I could just make a stencil in the screen, then cut the, like, the actual silk screen out of the frame, and just roll it up, put it in my pocket, and walk around and do whatever I wanted, but I just, like...
Isn't that how street artists are working these days? They have a stencil, they go out, they spray it.
It seems like it. I'm not hip to street art, I don't think, necessarily.
I
but
think
like,
you should start tagging your name all over Montreal.
It'd be a tough competition there, dude. It's a heavily graffitied city.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, like, some people don't want graffiti on their building, and they own the building, and they can do whatever they want with their building, but... Mm-hmm. I like the idea of public art. Like, as a citizen, when somebody does some nice graffiti mm-hmm. on the side of a building, I'm always like, oh, great, they beautified this.
Yeah, I think the same thing, too. It's interesting to see it. You know, it makes your city look a little bit different. And, like, the building I live in, you'd like it because it looks like New York 1986. Like, just, like, full-up graffiti on everything outside. When we first moved in, there was graffiti from the floor to as high as you could touch in, the hallways.
Okay.
And, like, everywhere. Like, really disgusting, horrible graffiti and, like...
What do you mean disgusting and horrible?
Just, like, really, like, I don't know, vulgar stuff. Do you know what I mean? Like, big cocks with jizz shooting all over the fucking place and, like, tons of swearing and, like, really offensive things. And, like,
a family building.
Definitely not. Like, one time, I remember, like, some, like religious folks came in and knocked on the door. And I was like, dude, you got to get out. Like, this is a bad building for you to be in. Like, yeah. Nobody's going to take this very well, you know.
And did they come in?
I was like, you got to go. Take it easy. You know what I mean? Like, have a nice day. But, I'm not buying what you're selling or whatever, you know?
I've had, like, Jehovah's Witnesses come to my door, maybe some Mormons a couple times. And, like, I either invite them in or, like, stand there talking for a while. I have this impulse to want to just, like, indulge it.
You're nicer than me. I won't indulge it. Not at all.
I'm fascinated by people who can go that far.
You're knocking on doors, you know, that's intense. That's the worst thing in the world.
You're wearing magic underwear.
Yeah, and it's a cold call every time, right? Like, nobody wants you to come to their door. Nobody.
Well, they say, like, with banner ads, like, what is it, like, 1% of banner ads or a fraction of 1% actually, like, deliver a conversion?
Yeah.
Like, what is the hit rate?
It's probably the same. Unless someone's already, like, pretty keen on Jesus or whatever, you know, like...
Or Joseph Smith.
Yeah, whoever, you know what I mean? It's
Zeno.
Like, you're not going to convert me because you came to my door.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that that's a really good way to get people into your ideals, you know what I mean?
Well, the Scientologists, like, they go to, like, disaster zones. It's like there's like a tsunami, and, like, then they're suddenly there when everyone's, like, at their most vulnerable.
That's super smart.
Right.
Like, you can't, like, that's amazing. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to get people that way. You're not going to get the guy in his house with his feet up on his footstool.
Yeah.
Reading the paper and, no, sorry, you know?
Like, you need somebody who's just, like standing in a daze in, like, town square.
Yeah, right? You need someone down and out. That's when you find religion, you know? People in prison find religion.
So you got no religion?
No, I grew up in, like, my father was an atheist. So I didn't really grow up in a home that had...
But sometimes I feel like atheism is a kind of a religion.
Like, anything's a religion if you really want to boil it down. Do you know what I mean?
But was it more like just like there was just no religion in the house, or was it like dogmatic atheism?
No, total low-key. Like, yeah. My father's not the type of man who would be like, this is my opinion. You know what I mean? He just keeps his mouth shut. He just didn't... He grew up in like the Catholic system and he found it to be like kind of like false.
Yeah, I grew up in the Catholic system.
So he had, like, he'd been kicked out of a lot of Catholic schools. And his famous story is that, like, his friend had this farm out in the country, and they'd go out there to hang out or do whatever the fuck they did. And the farm next was owned by the diocese, and it's where they'd send pregnant nuns.
Really?
So to him, he's like, well, that's bullshit that you get to have this kid. Like, you did everything you're not supposed to do in the Catholic, you know, as a nun. You have the child, and they still let you back in. Do you know what I mean?
They could still be nuns?
Yeah.
What happens to the kid?
Well, the adoption, I assume, you know what I mean? I wasn't there. But like, and then he also had problems with, like, his father was a drunk, so he said his father could drink and be a piece of shit Monday through Saturday night, but as long as he came in on Sunday morning and made his confession, then it was all good with God. But, like, to my dad, you know, that doesn't add up, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't add up to me either, you know?
No. So where did you grow up?
In a small town in southern Ontario.
Okay. So similar to Stan.
That book is where I grew up, you know what I mean? It's very similar to my life.
Is the story fairly similar? Does it hew to life or do you deviate?
Hey, you gotta deviate. It's a book, you know what I mean? But like, yeah, it's pretty close. Like, I didn't, maybe for like, oh, but it didn't work here. Like, things that happened, you know what I mean? So to like create the full story of it, like things don't happen when they necessarily happen, or like maybe something happens because it's more climatic. Because my life, isn't always climatic, you know. So yeah, I had to change some things. Nothing's like, it's a novel at the end of the day. Yeah. I didn't write a memoir.
Yeah.
So who would read that?
I don't know if I'm writing a memoir right now or a, you know, autobiographical novel, but I'm just like,
switch it to the autobiographical novel, dude. People like that better.
It's all fiction. Like, this is what I was talking about with Brad Phillips. It's all fiction.
Well, what do you remember? I mean, like, it's like
not much,
right? Because especially if you're going back 20 years, like, I don't know. It's like a lot happens to you, and like, you remember things a certain way, and I don't know if it's right. You know, it's the way I remember it. You know, so it's funny because I had someone write me from the book and was like, "You did a good job." On like capturing me, I was a piece of shit at that time. You know what I mean? I was like, oh, that's nice of him to write or whatever. You know, he's like, I've been 10 years sober and whatnot. So that's cool. You know,
you captured my full shittiness and all of its splendor.
Yeah. He actually was like, oh, I'm surprised you didn't add in this other story where he was like a piece of shit. You know what I mean? It's like apex piece of shit style, you know? So like, and he was like, I was just like, I didn't work. You know, I couldn't put it in there too.
So what kind of kid were you?
Probably a bad one, but like, I don't know. I don't think I was easy to get along with, you know, but quiet. I don't know. I kept to myself. I didn't have a lot of friends, you know. Loner, yeah. I guess.
Okay.
I don't know.
And what did your dad do?
He was a factory worker, just like in the book, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. He worked at the Ford Motor Company for like 25 years.
Back when you could do that, though.
Dude, I'm so jealous of that. If I could walk into a factory today and make the kind of money that he made to like... And to think how much he screwed around there, do you know what I mean? And, like, the stories he'd come home with and shit.
Was it a union job?
Of course. Canadian Auto Workers, right? Uh-huh. So, yeah, it was just you get away with murder there. And, like, you still come home with over 60 grand at the end of the year, do you know? And you get a cheaper car or whatever and all this bullshit, you know? Like, I wish I could do that.
Yeah.
I basically work in a factory, but I get zero of those benefits. Do you know what I mean?
All those benefits have been squeezed out, at least in the States. I don't know if Canada's any better.
You know, if you have a government job... Or you have, yeah, a government job or a postman. Even the post office in Canada, it's gone to shit, too. That's not a good job anymore.
Well, that's kind of how it is in the States. I mean, It's like the politicians have the benefits.
Yeah.
They definitely take care of themselves.
Well, of course. You know what I mean? The regular man, we don't need benefits. You have to pay for your health care. At least we can walk in the door and get service, whether I'm broke or not.
Is it good?
It's not great. Like, I broke my wrist. This is good stuff. I broke my wrist. I went to the hospital. The triage nurse was like, you shouldn't even be here. This is a joke. You're not, you know what I mean? So I'm like, well, whatever. That's your opinion. So then I saw the doctor. It took 5 or 6 hours sitting in emergency to like see a doctor and get a cast and everything. And when I was done, I was like, oh, I got to go see this triage nurse. I'm going to rub it in her fucking face, you know? But she had gone home by then.
How'd you break your wrist?
I hit a car on my bicycle. And I just went up over like the handlebars. And I just tapped my wrist on like his front quarter panel. And I had like a hairline fracture in my wrist. So then I went, like, 2 weeks later or whatever, I got to go to, like, the hospital to get, like, they're going to really assess me at this point, you know? So I go in there, and this guy's like, yep, we're going to do surgery. So they take a saw, they cut my cast up, they tape it on, and, like, you're going to get a call, and, like, within the next 2 weeks, you're going to go in for surgery. I was like, all right, fine. 2 weeks comes and goes, like, nothing. So I'm like, all right, it's Quebec, you know, the healthcare here isn't known to be really good. So I was like, I wait, and it gets to, like, 5-6 weeks. And at that point, you know, my wrist is healed. That's, you know, it doesn't take any longer than that. So I'm like, well, you got to do something. I can't have this cast on my arm forever. And so I was like, so to find out if I was registered for surgery, I had to call the doctor on call for surgery that day. So it's like they're in between surgeries if they even answer your call, right? And they're super stressed. And you're like, well, am I on this list? And like, we've never heard of you. And I was like, oh, that's awesome.
You're really selling me on single payer here.
Yeah, right? So then they're like, well, you better make an appointment for you. You got to go back to like the hospital again. I was like, fine, that's, well, you know, whatever. So then when you get there, too, it's like another 2 to 3 hour wait, even if you have an appointment. If it's your appointment's 11:15, you're getting in there at 1 or 2 o'clock, you know. So finally, I get in this little room, and there's two surgeons in there, and they're, like, sitting around at me. And the one guy goes, you know, Steve, you just fell through the cracks. And I was like, I knew it! I got you, man! And I said that to him, too. And he's like, oh, and he sighed, and I'm like... I knew Quebec Health. I was like, I wanted to really like be keen on Quebec healthcare, but I'm like, it fucking sucks, dude. And he's like, oh, where are you from? And I'm like, I'm from Ontario. And he just sighed, you know, because he knew like in that province, the healthcare is better, but you're still going to spend like the 5 hours.
So it's different from province to province?
Yeah, for sure. And like what you like Quebec's more socialist. So you have to have health insurance there. So if I don't have health insurance through a job, I have to have health insurance through the province. So then I have to pay for like X amount of dollars depending on how much money I made that year. Do you know what I mean?
I thought it was free.
That's free.
That's free.
Yeah, that's as free as it gets. Ontario is a little bit different. Like, I never had to pay anything. You know, maybe at the end of the year tax. No, not even. If you were, like, rich, maybe you might pay into, like, the healthcare.
How much out of pocket, like, for you a year just goes into healthcare?
The first, out of, like, what I actually use or what I would pay?
Just what bottom line?
I think the first year my wife and I were in Quebec, we paid $750 to be in their health, their system. What did we use? Nothing.
But you paid your seven, but still $750 is nothing.
No, not at all. At the end of the year,
I pay twice that a month.
Yeah,
for my family.
I don't know how I could. I don't know how anybody lives in America. It's sad, really.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
It's really sad, especially when like Cuba has better health care or something like that. You know what I mean?
It's hard. You know, it's hard to insure everybody and then make the system efficient. But like, can rich people in Canada buy better access, or is it like pretty much even for everybody?
I think in Ontario, there's the ability to maybe go buy better access. Quebec, I don't think so. I don't know enough about it to, like, quote me on this.
Okay.
But, like, I know, like, my wife's uncle, when he wanted gastric bypass surgery, he came to New York.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they weren't going to give it to him in Canada. So he's like, fine, I'll go to New York.
Well, that's I guess maybe that could be medically necessary. But some of that stuff is cosmetic.
Yeah, cosmetic surgery is never covered in Canada.
It isn't?
No, never.
So you can't get like, I can't get a tuck or something?
No, you couldn't get like a tattoo removal or anything like that. Or like, yeah, no breast implants, nothing like that.
Damn.
You know? But you can smoke for 50 years and maybe get a new lung for free.
Damn. Well, you know.
Right? You know.
It's better than the alternative, I guess.
It's better than me having to, I would have to work way harder, I think, to live if I had to like worry about my health care. Right? At least this way, it's like a bit of like, you have a security blanket in a way.
Right.
Like, if I break my leg, I'm just going to go to hospital. Like, when I went to the hospital and I broke my arm, my health card was expired. But they didn't even tell me. They had to take me as a Canadian citizen. And I didn't find out for, like, 6 weeks later when I had to go back to the hospital. Like, well, we can't accept you here because emergency, they have to take you. But here, you actually need a valid health card. And I was like, oh, damn.
Yeah. Well, so, okay. So you grow up in Canada, land of single-payer health care. You're a quiet kid, small fishing village. Dad has a union job at a Ford factory.
Yeah.
Was mom in the picture?
No, my mom died shortly after I was born.
Oh, she did?
Yeah.
How'd she die?
Cancer.
Okay. So you never knew her? Like,
no, not at all. I barely have stories about her.
Okay.
Like, my dad doesn't really talk about her, and like my older sister still, she's pretty reticent to talk about her too, I think.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, you know. That's life, I guess.
I mean,
you're gonna make me cry. Well, maybe. I don't know.
That shit happens, man. I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. You know, it's other people have it worse.
I say that too, but it's like it still sucks. Suffering is suffering.
That's the thing. Everybody suffers. It doesn't matter. You know, you can be the richest person on the face of the planet. You're still gonna suffer in some way.
Sometimes I meet people to whom like nothing really shitty has happened. And I'm like, wow. Like, part of me is like, wow, lucky you.
Yeah, right.
But then the other part of me is like, you're going to get yours.
That's me right there. I'm like, oh, I'm waiting on it. Do you know what I mean? It's like rubbing my hands together the whole nine yards, you know, like I can't wait for that comeuppance.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, no, if you stick around long enough.
Right. You know, or you die a horrible way. Maybe that's your comeuppance, or you don't stick around long enough. You know,
I don't think people, myself included, like this is my mindset lately. It's like, I don't got to really remember, like I'm going to fucking die and it could happen like at any moment.
Yeah, that's a scary thought, eh? I think of it more now that I'm like, I'm nearing 40, do you know what I mean? So it's like, I see myself in like a position where like, what, I've seen my father, and he would have been more scared when I was younger. I'd be like, no, you can mouth off this total stranger and it won't matter. And my dad would be like, no, you could stab you or whatever, you know what I mean? Because your life becomes more precious as you get older because, you know, it's coming to an end, you know?
Well, yeah, like there's, you know, you realize, I guess it's normal. You hit 40. I mean, it's like the old cliche. You start to have a greater sensitivity, but it doesn't matter if you're 25. It doesn't matter if you're 45.
You can be wiped out at any second.
And it's just, yeah, there's like just this like thin little membrane between life and death.
Like, I think it was like about a month ago, maybe two. This guy I went to high school with, he's probably 4 years younger than me, took a nap, never woke up.
What was it?
I don't know to this day. I'm not close enough to them. And like nobody's come forth and told me exactly what it was or anything, but like.
You think it was opiates?
I don't. He was like, maybe I haven't known him for the last 10 years or so, but I couldn't see him being an opiate addict. Do you know what I mean? He just fell asleep and never woke up. You know, four kids, a wife.
Sleep apnea, maybe.
Yeah, who knows? You know, he was a big dude, though.
Apnea.
Right? So, yeah, actually, I never even thought of that, the apnea, but totally.
Got to get a CPAP.
I guess, dude. I don't know.
Yeah, those things are hardcore.
Yeah?
Yeah, my father-in-law, RIP, he didn't die of sleep apnea, but he had a CPAP.
Okay.
So when they would come to visit, he would have, like, the gear.
Jesus.
It's like this
the big mask and everything, yeah. Right? Like the Darth Vader style shit. My wife says I have sleep apnea because I'm a terrible sleeper. She's like, that's probably what you got.
Do you make noises and stuff?
She says I'm a snorer, you know. Uh-huh. But I think that's because I'm a drunk.
You got to get a CPAP.
I'm not fucking getting nothing, dude. She can put up with it, man. I would never sleep with that thing on.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I couldn't. I'm too sensitive.
Yeah, I don't know how people sleep. It's like, I could barely sleep as a kid when I had braces and I had to wear a headgear.
Yeah, I could see that too. That would be tough for me.
Just like any kind of thing on your face.
Yeah, I don't do it, you know. I can wrap a blanket around my head or whatever, but like some sort of weird mask, no thanks.
You a good sleeper?
No, terrible.
I'm such a light sleeper. I'm realizing that, or at least lately. Like sometimes I go into cycles where like I'm sleeping pretty well, but lately it's like the smallest noise.
I can sleep through anything. I just don't get like more than 4 hours in a stretch. My body will just get up and I'm like, okay, well, I guess I better do some stuff. It's 2 a.m. or whatever, you know.
You get up?
Yeah, for sure. What am I going to do? Roll around in bed, you know, keep my wife up?
I don't know.
That's kind of rude.
I like to read Twitter.
Yeah, that's a good time to. I don't go on Twitter that late. I don't know. I'll just read a book maybe or watching TV or something.
You turn on your, but you like, you have to get out of bed. You can't like turn the light on when your wife is sleeping.
No, I get out of bed and I go down. Like we sleep in like a mezzanine because I live in a loft, right? So we have like a single, like a main floor, second floor, and then we have like a mezzanine on the top that's just a ladder where our bed is.
Okay.
So I have to like crawl down a ladder in the dark, like half drunk at like 2 a.m. I do that often.
Do you drink every day?
Yeah, pretty much these days. I'm not proud of that, but it maybe sounded like I was. But yeah, Quebec's just like, there's a big drinking culture there, so it's really easy to drink.
It's fucking 30 below zero. What are you going to do?
It's pretty depressing, you know what I mean? There's I listen to this musician, Coulter Wall. He's like a Canadian country musician. And one line is like, every December it gets harder to put the bottle down. And I was like, yeah, it really does. Cause like every winter is just worse.
Do you do anything outside? Like, can you, like what happens in Montreal? Everyone's just inside.
Yeah, pretty much. It's pretty funny because of like the first big thaw. It's like, holy shit. There are a lot of people in this city, man. Cause like you don't see anybody really. Like there's nobody on the streets. There's less cars. It's also a culture of people who are like very prone to calling to work sick or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Where there's like, if it's raining, people won't, they'll just get, yeah, fuck it, I'm not going in. Do you know what I mean? Kind of thing. So if it's like...
That's the French.
It is a bit of the French. They have a mentality where they don't... I commend it. I hate working too. You know what I mean? But like, I don't know. I called into work like 2 weeks ago because it was 30 below freezing in Canada.
That's too much.
Oh, yeah. I got to the bus and I was just like, oh, you know what? I'm like, fuck this. I did it yesterday and I'm not doing it again today.
It's not even safe.
Yeah, I don't think so, really. Because I tried to fly to Kansas last week, right? And it was that polar vortex bullshit. And, like, all the ground crews in Toronto went home because it was, like, negative 30 out or something like that. So all these flights were canceled.
Yeah, as they should be.
Well, I was kind of bummed out. I wanted to go to Kansas to read. But, like, I just flew to Toronto to eat a chicken dinner and go home, basically, you know?
That's how it was.
It was a bummer, yeah.
Where were you going in Kansas?
Lawrence.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What was that? Like, how did that happen?
Book club was like, we want you to come out. We'll buy you a plane ticket. And I was like, sure, I'll go. You know, who's going to turn that down?
Yeah.
I'm just some small town Canadian boy. I never thought I'd make it to fucking Kansas, dude. Get out of here, man. We were like going around LA last night and like, they're asking us like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I don't know. I never thought I'd ever come here. You know, it's very surreal to me.
What are your impressions? Do you like it?
I like how wide the streets are, like all the avenues are. It's really neat. I like a lot of the architecture is cool. I like how low it is.
Yeah.
That's really neat, like the single-story, two-story buildings, because like out east, you don't really get that. Like the really wide streets, that's not really eastern either. It shows how new the city is, I guess, you know?
It seems like, I mean, LA is, it's over 100 years old, which isn't very old in the earthly scheme of things. But it just feels like one of these places that's always going to feel new, even like 500 years from now.
I could see that. It's the Hollywood kind of thing vibe, you know what I mean? And like, it's always going to change, you know, I think. I don't know. It's just it's a weird city, you know. I've been here a night, so I can't really comment too much on it.
You're not a full authority.
Yeah, I don't really have I could just be running my mouth here, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's the architecture. There is a lot of actually, like for people who are into architecture, there are... there are many like houses and buildings that are like renowned.
Yeah.
And you can do architecture tours, but there's no uniformity. Like in Los Angeles, you can kind of build whatever the fuck you want. There's no like city codes and there's no uniformity. So you can have like a colonial house right next to like this big boxy modern house right next to,
you know, like some Spanish villa or whatever. Yeah, right? But yeah. I kind of like that. Super eclectic. Or you get like, you just said it, like a massive house. And the next one's like this tiny little like two room house, you know? And I think that's really cool. Cause then it's like, there's probably a bunch of different people all living around in the same area. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I mean, I feel like people, you know, what happens is people buy these littler houses, they knock them down, they put the bigger houses on the property, and
yeah, I guess that makes sense.
It's like changing out. There's no more land to build on. So it's like you got
where you're gonna go, right?
Yeah. So, okay. So you, as a kid, are you writing? Are
no.
you thinking about writing?
Yeah, I think I always thought about writing. I tell a story, and like I was a kid, and I was like, I want to write books because I was really into like Stephen King or whatever. You know, I was like, I want to do that. And then I just remember a voice in my head is like, no, you can't do that. You know what I mean? That's not for people like you or whatever.
So Stephen King was like the origin story for you?
Maybe, I guess. I don't know. I just read all my like older sister's cast-offs because she's like, shit. Yeah, she's 11 years older than me, I think. Maybe 9 or 11, I don't know. But anyway, so she was into more advanced stuff than me. So it's like I wanted, like, she's my older sister. I looked up to her or whatever. So, like, I just would read anything that she had laying around. So it tended to be, like, The Dead Zone or, like, you know, Pet Sematary or whatever, Cujo, shit like that. So that was a lot of my, like, earlier novel reading would have been that kind of stuff.
You know? I remember reading The Shining in, like, junior high and, like, actually, like, going down into my living room with, like, my, like, family in there watching TV.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I was, like, too scared to read it.
That's too funny. They're creepy when you're a kid.
Yeah.
I like that stuff, though, as a kid, because there was no, like, there was no censorship to it. Like, the wildest stuff can happen in a book, whereas, like, TV, they kept it pretty tame. Like, especially when I was a kid, it was, like, 1986 or whatever.
You know? Well, and there's, like, yeah, your parents are, you know, like, they're always like, oh, you're reading good.
Right? It'd be the most smut you've ever seen, you know? It's like full of sex.
Yeah, I was going to say, someone's getting mutilated.
Yeah,
here.
You know?
While you're watching, like, you know, The Facts of Life or whatever.
Oh, but he's reading.
Yeah, but he's reading.
That's good, right? It's a good skill to have, you know?
So, okay, so that sort of turns the light on, but you don't believe you can do it.
No.
When did you start to believe that you could?
Probably when I was 30. When I got fired in Toronto, I was collecting unemployment. I was just like, I'd always kind of toyed around with writing, and I'd probably written for a couple websites at that point, or maybe not even. No, not even. So I was just like, fuck it, I'm going to write this. I'm going to write because I got all this time. I'm just collecting unemployment checks, you know? So, and there's like CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, they'll put on like a writing contest and stuff like that. So like, I was like, I'll write this short story. I'm so hot. I'm going to fucking win this. You know what I mean? And then like, clearly you don't, you know what I mean? Like, obviously. But I just, you know, I found it enjoyable enough to keep doing it. And then I'd submit enough where nobody was like, you stink, dude, stop. So I just kept doing it.
Were you getting some yeses?
It took a minute, you know what I mean? More nonfiction stuff was easy for me to get, like, yeses in, you know what I mean? If it was just, like, an essay, I think they're a little, I don't know, hoity-toity about that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? Literature can, like, can look down its nose at you a bit, you know what I mean? So yeah, I got some yeses, and there's nothing I'm really proud of, you know what I mean? And I won't be like showing them to anybody.
Yeah, but you get started.
Everybody's got to start somewhere, and like I didn't go to university or anything, so that was my training, you know?
Yeah, that's all you need. You don't need university.
No.
You need to read and write.
Yeah, exactly. You need university if you want to be like an engineer or a doctor or a lawyer, but like an art career, no. You know, you can go on, you can always find stuff that you like and make art. You know, I don't think you need some stuffy old guy with tenure telling you like, this is art or that's not art or you're no good. Like I was good at drawing as a kid. So I was really into that. And then like, by the time I got into high school, like my art teachers were just such cunts about it. You know what I mean? Like you got to do this and you got to do that. And I failed grade 10 art like fucking 5 times, dude. I kept taking it. I was resilient. You know what I mean? But I kept failing it, and I'd fail it worse every single time, you know? But, like, I kept at it, and I'm probably the only one now that I know that may have still, like, of a lot of the kids back then who still makes art, you know?
Yeah, I've talked to many fine writers who went the academic route, and I think you can do it that way, but I feel like you have a better chance of making interesting art if you kind of forge your own path.
Yeah, because you're not like, I don't know, you're not stuck in this school of like thought. You have your own school of thought, right? Because it's like, oh, I like this guy or this girl or like that was cool or I like this movie or I like this record or maybe I want it to sound like this or I like that was a cool, like a concept record is a good thing to like think about when you're writing, I think, you know? So it's like you have all these other influences that you can take into it, and you have nobody telling you whether it's good or bad or you should use it or anything. I like that, you know, trust yourself.
You didn't have any kind of writing community?
I don't know. I guess I have friends, you know what I mean? But, like, I don't really...
Like friends who write in Canada?
No, all internet people. I don't really know a single writer in Canada other than, like, people Gian's published, you know what I mean? And that's because he published them. It's so big that there's no real, like... I don't like the scene of Montreal. I don't fit in there.
Why not?
It's just not for me. It's more, you know what? It's like the last place Alt-Lit died. I feel like it's last vestige of, like, it had a stronghold there, you know? And I just don't, it doesn't suit me, you know what I mean? That's not to say people there aren't nice or whatever. And, like, come read Montreal. Fucking tons of people show up. Tons. Like, way more than in New York, for sure. I've been disappointed in New York when I go to readings there. And it's like...
That's because there's a million readings.
That's what it is. Or it's not even that. It's, well, I can go see this cool band tonight. Or, like, maybe I'll just stay. It doesn't matter. There's something awesome to do every single night. That's why I was stoked on Lawrence, man. That would have been a good reading because, like, who goes to Lawrence? Zero people. They're going to appreciate it way more, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've heard and read, like, bands and comedians always say, like, Los Angeles is one of the worst cities to play. Because everyone's all jaded and, you know.
That's exactly it. Like New York, Toronto, any of those cities. When you have too much to do, it's really easy for you to be like, nah, I'll just stay in, you know. Because, like, something cool will be here tomorrow or whatever, you know. I don't know.
It's like, and yeah, same thing with our sports teams. Like, nobody, like, everybody kind of, like, shows up at halftime, like, leaves early.
Is it expensive to go see a sports game?
Yeah. And it's, like, a pain in the ass to get there. And, like, I don't know. I just feel like L.A., like, I come from the upper Midwest.
Okay.
So I was born in Milwaukee.
Right.
And it's sort of, you know,
it's
similar.
I'm sure it's similar to Southern Ontario.
Yeah, you really, like, people get into it. The winters are hard. And
if there's something to do, you'll go. It could be a barn dance. It doesn't matter. It's just like, shit, it's boring here. I got to get out of the house.
Have you been to a barn dance?
No. Okay. Maybe in, like, a summer camp or something like that. But, like, I can't imagine me, Steve, at fucking 18, shuffling on down to the barn dance.
I want to go to a barn dance.
40-year-old Steve would probably go, you know. I was really punk rock back then, so that would have been, like, the antithesis of where I would go.
Were you a violent kid?
Probably, yeah.
What do you mean, probably?
Well, yeah. Isn't every little boy violent?
I wasn't.
Oh.
I was, like, terrified to get in a fight.
I don't know. I was probably, I wasn't a big fighter, but I would still probably quantify myself as violent.
How so?
That's the door you don't want to open. I don't know. I pick on kids and shit like that, or, like, you know, I don't know, standard kid stuff. I just like violent things too.
Were you a bully?
I was bullied, and then probably in later life I become a bully.
Yeah,
I think that's the natural course because you have to. I think because even now my wife is like, you got to chill out on these confrontations, dude. You know, like
with whom? Like, give me an example.
Oh, anybody. If somebody even remotely wrongs me, or if I think I've been like anyway slighted out in public, I'm fucking yelling at you, or like, what the fuck is your problem? You know, I'm really quick to anger, you know.
Like at like the airport or something, or?
Yeah, at the airport, actually, my wife was like, you got to chill out, dude, because this woman was like, she's like trying to get me to do the check-in with the stupid fucking machine. I just wanted to talk to the man at the desk. He wasn't doing anything. You know, there's not a lineup. Yeah. So what does it matter? I'm like, I just want to talk to this human, you know?
Yeah.
She's like, I'm a human. And I was like, well, I don't want to use this. I just want you to do it. I just paid, like, a lot of money for these plane tickets, and now I have to fucking check myself in. Like,
yeah, right.
I want this. He's not doing anything, man. And it's like, I walked away, and then clearly the woman thought I was rude or whatever. And my wife's like, yeah, you got to calm down. But that's not even a bad one, I guess. You know what I mean? Like,
well, give me an example of a bad one.
Getting and yelling at someone? I got into a fight with this guy in my hall, like, a week ago, I guess. Because, well, we were sitting around. I had a right to be mad at this guy, though, I think. Definitely had a right. Because it goes back to the graffiti. So we're sitting in my, like my apartment. I'm cooking some dinner for my wife and her friend. And it's like, all you can smell is spray paint. It's like, oh, fuck. Are you kidding me, man? So my wife's complaining. Her friend's like, oh, this sucks. It smells really bad in here. Dinner's, like, pretty much ruined, you know? So I'm like, oh, fuck it. Now I got to go fucking fight a guy in the hall again, you know? Because it's not the first time. I get into a lot of fights and, like, people in the halls just doing rude shit.
These people live there?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Like, I've had to throw out homeless people on multiple occasions who just, like...
You write about this?
Yeah, all the time, because it's, like,
Was it, like, your Hobart column?
Yeah, that guy, because they set up shop, you know what I mean? It's like, I can go to the landlord, and they'll be like, sure, we'll get rid of them, but 5 o'clock rolls around, they just move back in, because the landlord's not there. They're not dumb. So this guy's spray painting in the hall. I throw open the door, And the guy from across the hall is out there, and I'm like, oh, thank heavens. Finally, some backup with this guy. You know what I mean? So then it's just like a big yelling exchange with this stupid asshole with his face tattoo, fucking spray painting his stupid fucking tag in the hall and like...
Face tattoo, huh?
Over people's doors, you know, and like we're yelling at this guy, and then like this other guy down the hall comes out whose door is getting spray painted over, you know what I mean? And he's just like, and it's like, you are such a pussy, man. Like, fucking come out and say something, you know? Like, I don't know. So that's not pretty...
Did you throw a punch?
No, I didn't get to that. The guy was like, the other guy went at him, you know, and he's like, oh, what are you going to do, kill me, man? And it's like, you know how these people are, right?
Yeah.
And it just kind of devolved into this thing where he's just grunting at me. Like, I was just, like, trying to have a civil conversation with him. Do you know what I mean? And then, like,
see, that's what I think I would have tried to do. See, I kind of admire people who somebody's like spray painting your door. You open the door and you say, get the fuck out of here.
Right? You know,
like, I like to think I would do that. But sometimes I think I'm too big of a pussy. I'm like, hey, man, would you please? And
I've tried that. You know what? Normally I'm the guy like I was trying to be nice because I'm trying to like be better or whatever. So I was like, I'll go this nice road because normally I'm the guy who comes out. I'm like, get the fuck out of here, dude. What is your problem? You know what I mean? Like,
and they usually go, I bet.
Yeah, because it's usually like I'm gearing myself up to deal with like a homeless guy or somebody like maybe with mental problems or something. But half the time, it's just some fucking stuck up white kid who's fucking probably chosen to be, in my opinion. Do you know what I mean? Or it's like, you chose to get that face tattoo. It's not my problem. You live on the streets anymore. You know what I mean?
That's like you're crossing, like there's some sort of like line that you're crossing when you get a face tattoo.
You know, that's a job ender, dude.
Yeah.
You know, like it used to be a hand tattoo or knuckle tattoos, but you can get away with that now. But like your fucking face has got a dragon on it, dude. You're probably not getting a job at the bank. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Yeah. You're like, you're foreclosing on a lot of possibilities.
Oh, your future's over. You know what I mean? Like, because when I was younger, if you got like arm tattoos, it was basically a job ender. You know what I mean?
But you
like,
got tattoos?
Yeah, I'm pretty tattooed.
Yeah, but, that's right. You got like sleeves?
Yeah, well, just one. But, you know, those were job enders back then. But now it's like the kid at the grocery store has full sleeves and his neck's tattooed and his hair's purple. You know what I mean?
I feel like I've said this before, but I feel like a sense of inferiority, like artistically and creatively around people with tattoos.
Why?
I don't know. I just feel like, wow, they know, like they have a vision or
no,
they can commit.
Really? You're going to regret those tattoos one day. You know, that's all part of the process, you know?
Did you draw yours?
No, a lot of them, because I lived with a tattooer for, like, a good portion of my 20s or whatever. So we were, like, best friends, and he just tattooed me. He was a good tattooer and a good artist. So I just was like, fucking tattoo me, dude.
Yeah. Well, I guess if I had lived with somebody who could do it.
I would never pay for it. It seems it's such, like, a privileged thing to have because it's so expensive. Right?
Do you feel good about them now?
I'm trying to black a few of them out just because I find them, I don't really like them. I've blacked some out too, like went over them, you know what I mean? But like, I'm tattooed. What am I going to do? You know what I mean? I don't care.
So, they look kind of cool. Sleeves are cool.
I guess, you know. I don't like kind of what the culture became because like originally I would have got tattooed as like a deterrent for people to talk to me. But I feel like that's changed a lot over the last 10 years because like everybody has tattoos now and it's not just like a scary guy down at the wharf, you know what I mean? That's who I wanted to be, you know, like, so I wanted to be left alone.
You have like the wharf.
Yeah. You can't take the fisherman out of me. I was in that village. There's no, I have to get like, I'll meet people from Halifax, like Canada. And they'll be like, oh, are you from Halifax, man? I'm like, no, dude, I'm just from a small fishing village. I'm like, are you sure? You really got an East Coast vibe, man.
Yeah. I feel like I'm holding out. So like eventually, like now that everybody's got tattoos, eventually, like, people without tattoos are going to be edgy.
That's the thing, right? If I was, like, 19 or 17 or 15 right now, there's no, you wouldn't catch me getting a tattoo.
See, I'm ahead of the curve.
Right? Like, it's just
playing the long game.
Yeah, exactly. But then I guess, you know, four generations from now, people get tattooed again.
Do you fish? Like, did you grow up on boats and fishing and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, for sure. We'd go down to the creek and fish. Like, my dad was, like, he had the little cabin cruiser, and he'd go out on Lake Erie and, like, troll or whatever. Yeah.
So are you like outdoorsy?
I do like to be outdoors. I hate the city, honestly. If it wasn't like screen printing, unfortunately, is like kind of married to the city. It's easier to get a job there than like small town anywhere because like there's no shops there. So I'm kind of married to that. But I would much prefer to be outside of the city where I can breathe. I do better in like a national park or something, you know. I like that. I feel better.
Where would you live if you could live anywhere? Do you have that in your head?
I often say to my wife, if we're going to be poor and we don't speak the language, let's move to South America because like, at least it's hot. You know what I mean? I would move somewhere warm, but if I was stuck in Canada, I'd probably live in rural Quebec.
I've been thinking about Mexico City.
That'd be cool. It'd be intense, right?
I guess. I don't know. It seems kind of beautiful. And
just people who live there haven't even been out of it. You know what I mean? It's so big, you know?
Yeah, it is a big city.
I'd like that. I don't know. I like South America. I think it'd be a cool place to live. like Chile or something.
Have you been there?
No.
Just the South America of the imagination.
Yeah, just the one in my head, you know. It's like Kafka's America. It's like, but a nicer version, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, I can't figure out the place. I keep thinking, like, where do I want to be? What's the place?
Yeah, I think you're just supposed to make the place you are the best.
That's what I'm trying to do.
You seem to be doing a good job of it. You know?
All right. I like the mountains. I that's one thing that, like, I consistently think is that wherever I live, I sort of need to have, like, a mountain close.
I need a body of water.
Yeah.
I can't. Like, I don't, like, I couldn't live landlocked. That's really crazy to me.
Wait, is it sad that I don't even know if Montreal is land? Montreal's on...
We live in a river. We're an island.
Oh.
It's like, yeah.
I was going to say, it's not coastal.
No, it's St. Lawrence.
The St. Lawrence.
It goes around on either side.
And that's enough of a body of water for you?
It's enough. I don't need, like, the ocean or anything. Because I grew up on, like, Lake Erie, right? So it's not like... It's a big lake. But, like, I could do just as well with, like, a smaller lake. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. You ice fish?
No, dude. That's insane. Why would I go out there on that?
My wife's from Minnesota. Her brother is... what does he do?
He's big, like, out there, right?
What's that?
I think my dad used to ice fish and be bigger. Like, it seems like an American thing to me.
Yeah, well, no, he does that, but he's also, he's like a water patrol. Like, he saves people.
Okay.
Out on the lakes, but in the winter, like, he puts on, like, a scuba suit and goes, like, underwater to, like, fish people out in the dead of winter.
That's commendable.
Yeah.
You couldn't catch me doing that.
Like, we're talking, like, I don't even know how cold that water is, but brutal.
Yeah, dude, no thanks. I took a cold shower today. I thought I was going to die.
But he'll tell stories. He'll be like, yeah, you know, some drunk guy drove his car out onto the lake and fell through the ice and died.
What an amazing story, dude.
Just miserable, though. You know?
But they're good. I wish people like that wrote more books.
Yeah.
Because I think those are more interesting stories to me, I think. Like some guy who fucking fishes out corpses out of a lake for a living.
Right.
That would be a good book, you know?
I know.
Maybe there's a good book there.
Well, but, you know, you have to, like, I feel like, and maybe you disagree, but in order to do the work of writing a book... Like, A, you have to have a lifestyle and a financial situation that allow for the time.
It's a lot of time. Like, I barely work. I try to punch in as much writing as I can, you know?
And you don't sleep a lot.
Yeah, so there's that, too, you know?
You know?
I don't have kids or anything. So, like, I don't have a lot. I have zero obligations. I've tried to do that with my entire life. I just, like, people at jobs don't offer me a management position or anything. You know what I mean? There's a reason for that. I go in there and I have a very, I don't give a fuck attitude about this. I'm here for your money and I have to do it. And that's about it. You know?
So you're not ambitious in the traditional sense?
In that, no, not at all. I couldn't care. Like, I don't think I've ever went into a job and been like, I'm going to run this place one day, you know, like if I can pull my shirt out. Cause it's just like, I think every time I go into a job, it's just like, there's a big clock that that's like a stopwatch, counting back clock to the point where they just like, dude, you got to get the fuck out of here. We can't deal with you anymore. Cause that's usually what happens.
That's the pattern.
Yeah. Usually for the longest time, it was like, there was a 3-year clock from the time I punched in that first time. There was 3 years and that boss was going to, at the end, lay me off cause they were so sick of me.
My dad always says that, the longest you're supposed to be, and my dad was like a corporate guy.
Okay.
You know, but he's like 7 years.
That makes sense.
7 years in any role and you sort of hit the ceiling and you got to change. Like, not necessarily change company, but you have to change.
Do something different. Yeah. He's right. Cause like I've done the same job for like standing in front of that machine, putting that shirt on the platen, bringing the screen down and pushing the ink through the stupid screen, raising it up, pushing it along and having another one in front of me to do it again, you know? And I've done that for 15 years and like, that sucks. Like, it's not, it's really, it's pathetic. You know what I mean? At the end of that, fine. Do you know what I mean? Like, I should have went and did something else at this point, but I didn't.
But I mean, what are you going to do?
I don't know.
I think about it all the time. I'm like, what's the thing to do? I feel like be like a hospice nurse. Be like a noble profession.
Yeah, you're just saying. Because like then you go home and you feel good about it, at least.
That's
you
what
know?
I mean. Like, but also be able to make enough money to get by or support your family.
I feel like a hospice nurse would do all right. No,
they don't get paid shit.
Oh.
It's like teachers. It's like you'd be like, oh wow, teachers. Like we pay these people who do these. Like,
that's really, so sad. Though,
it's so sad.
But like the biggest scumbag will make so much money, like a lawyer or whatever, like a really shitty, crummy lawyer will do so well.
But
like
the
plastic
guy,
surgeon.
The guy who changes the diaper of that lawyer when he's like in his dying days and like make sure that he's comfortable. It's like you make 35K.
That sucks.
Or whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or the person who taught him originally as a kid. Do you know what I mean? And got him on that path to be a lawyer. Didn't do so hot either and was probably mistreated by every student as well, you know?
Are teachers underpaid up in Canada?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I don't know. I don't know enough of them, but, like, I'm pretty sure they're not. They're not. People take that job for the summers. Do you know what I mean? That's it. That's all. Like, I would, too. You know what I mean? Who doesn't want? It's Canada. The whole rest of the year stinks. You have 2 months. And if you can get it off, do it, you know?
Yeah.
Especially Montreal.
Well, know? Montreal must be glorious in the summer. It's like up north. I mean, in the summer, once the weather gets great, everybody comes outside.
Dude, it's a party, man. The whole city's just so excited. We really appreciate it. That's what I always say. But it's also good. I like that long winter because I can hunker down and I can get a lot of writing done because I don't want to be outside and nobody's coming over. Nobody's got, like, we're not going to the parks. We're not going out, you know?
Yeah. So welfare, you said the book hews pretty close to your life experience. Did you leave home at 16?
Yeah, 16. Yeah, just like the book, probably close to my 17th birthday. I left for a couple months, came home. It didn't work out, so I left again.
But just not getting along. Like, is it the same? Like, not getting along with family?
100%. I just didn't. I think, like, because I'm a loner, it translated into my family too. Do you know what I mean? Like, I kept them at a pretty far distance from me. You know what I mean? And I know, like, I can look back at me as a kid and I was like, I was bad for that. I didn't really share anything with my family.
Why are you such a loner? Is it truly just nature or is it nurture?
I think it's nature. Maybe. I don't know. I think I just spent a lot of time alone as a kid too. Cause like my sister was so much older. So when I was like one, she's in high school.
Yeah.
You know, and she's got boys on the brain and like other things and like hot rods and shit, you know? So it's like a little brother wasn't like something that I was like, so I wasn't super close to her at the time. And then my dad worked at like the factory shift that I call the, you don't have a family shift where you basically get up when everybody's gone, you know, you leave at 3 and you come home at 11, you know, or like you're home by midnight, you know? So like, I didn't really see him as much as a kid.
So who took care of you?
My dad's mother raised me as a kid.
Okay.
She was the one around the house.
Did you like her?
Yeah, I loved her. And she was my mom, man.
Yeah.
It, like, she died probably a decade ago, though, so.
Yeah.
I think after she died, that's when I left, too. Like, I still stayed around that, like, Great Lakes Basin, you know? And then after she died, it was like, okay, I can leave. I don't have anything here anymore, necessarily. That's kind of how I felt. So that's when I moved to Toronto and then eventually Montreal.
Yeah. So, you leave home, you got a backpack?
Yeah.
You're a teenager?
Yeah.
You have no idea what the fuck you're doing. You have no money.
Maybe 50 bucks at best. And like, I knew the orphan though, right? The first time I had that older friend too, that's the guy, the Greg character. He's the guy who called me and was like, you did a good job.
Oh, right.
or emailed me. And like, so I just like hitchhiked into town and
The guy that worked at the YMCA?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because we used to party at his place a lot, you know, because he was living on his own and he was maybe 18, 19, probably 19. No, yeah, 19, because he could buy booze. So he was 19, so I knew he'd let me sleep on his couch, you know what I mean? So I just did that because I'd had enough, you know what I mean? It wasn't working, you know, for any of us. It wasn't good for my stepmom. It wasn't good for anybody. And that was good for my half-sister. It wasn't good for me.
Yeah.
So
you're just like, I'm fucking out of here.
Yeah, I kind of always wanted to, too, you know what I mean? Like, if I could have went and lived in the garage or something as a kid, I would have done that or, like, anything just to be outside of the house. Like, when I got home from school, I left, and I didn't come back until I fucking had to be there. And then I went to my room, you know, that was the end of it.
It's not entirely unusual right around that age. I mean, you know, you're starting to, like, it's like the biology of it. You're getting ready to leave the nest. I think that as teenagers, you're starting to try to assert your independence and... Then if you also have like a loner tendency, like a desire to be alone.
I think it's probably in my family too for people to like fuck off too because I have like cousins I'd never heard of that just disappeared. You know what I mean? Or like,
What do you mean disappeared?
Well, like one time I was riding my bike to work and I got a phone call, right? So I answer it and this is barrister. You know what I mean? He's like, hey, I've got some money for you. And I was like, why do you have money for me? He's like, this uncle of yours died. And I'm like, well, I've never even seen this uncle before. I've never even heard of him, dude.
Great.
And I was like, well, how did this happen? And he's like, well, this guy's will was so out of date that his wife was the beneficiary. And she had died like a decade earlier, right? So there's no beneficiary there. So they went to like his kids. And then there was cousins there. And there was one that disappeared. And he's like, it took me so long to find him. But he had died, a junkie in like Vancouver or whatever. He just disappeared. Nobody ever saw him again, you know? So I guess that's what I mean. And then I have another uncle who just like he went to Australia and nobody ever saw him again, you know? He just started a whole new family out there.
What's your like lineage? You said you're Welsh?
Yeah, Welsh.
So Anwell is Welsh.
That's what they tell me. I could be wrong.
Like you're full Welsh?
I doubt it. I think I look more Nordic or German a lot of the time. I get mistaken for like Russian often too.
Yeah. Like you've got like, I mean, for those of you listening, Steve's got like this beard. He's got like the fisherman's cap. I feel like you could pass for Russian. I feel like you could also, like, there's also kind of like a Carl Knausgaard, like some kind of distant
relation. Yeah, for sure. I get like a Nordic lineage. I think so too, because I'm really tall as well, you know.
How tall are you?
6'3", maybe.
That's good.
Yeah.
It's good to be tall.
I don't like having people, like, I don't like have to look up at people.
That's me. I'm like, well, I'm like almost 6 feet, but
not still good, you know?
It could be worse.
You could be 5'2", like Danzig or whatever, you know?
So you leave home, and that began kind of your adventure. You're bouncing around. You're like scraping by, to say the least.
Yeah.
You're figuring, I guess you this is like when you fell into screen printing or figuring.
No, not even. Like, I didn't screen print until probably for another few years. But I was just like, when I left home, there was nothing to do in that area except, like, maybe get a factory job. You know, there's no real, maybe you're going to work at, like, a fucking coffee shop, you know, or something, or McDonald's, you know what I mean? There's nothing. It's all, like, support stuff or a garage, you know? So I was like, I just got to, like, get that high school education, man. If I finish grade 12, I can go get this stupid job, and then I can be done with it all. Do you know what I mean? I don't have to really think anymore. And, like, so I just tried to do that, and it's like...
Do they have, like, a GED in...
Yeah, I could have, like, dropped out at 16 and done, like, adult education and got, like, the high school equivalency or whatever. I could have done that, but, like...
You went back to school and finished?
I stayed in school. Like, I didn't ever stop.
So you left home, but you didn't leave school?
No. Okay. I just kept going. I was like, this is what I have to do. I have like a year and a half left, man. I just got to fucking soldier through it. And then I can get that factory job. And then I don't have to think, you know, and then it's over. You know what I mean? That's what I'm supposed to do. And then I can just settle in to die, basically. Because that's what I thought I had to do. You know, I was like, get the factory job. Then I'll get this wife that probably hates me. And we'll have a bunch of kids. And they won't like me either. And then I'll drink myself to death. You know what I mean? Like, I thought that that was just what you do. I didn't realize there's a whole fucking world out there that I could do a ton of different things in, you know, just leave. If I had this wherewithal that I have now at 16, I would have dropped out and I just would have hitchhiked somewhere and never came back. I wouldn't have got that high school education because it hasn't helped me once.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel the same way. Like, if you're going to do this kind of work, you got to teach yourself.
Yeah.
Nobody can teach you how to do it.
And nobody's been like, can I see your high school diploma, sir?
Right.
You know, like, sure. Okay.
And it's
like,
actually cooler if you don't have one. I feel like it
really?
Gives you, it gives you like an edge.
People I feel. Going, yeah. Like my friend is a tattooer. He just dropped out at 16 and he was like, I'm going to go get an apprenticeship. He did that.
It's kind of a piece with people who have tattoos. I feel like people who like dropped out of school or like did something edgy and different. I feel like that, like in the arts community, that's like revered. It's like, oh.
Yeah, 100%. It's then you're this weirdo, right? You're like the odd man out, you know?
He's like a savant. He's too smart for school.
Yeah, or something like that. I can see that. It has its own like cachet, you know, right? It wouldn't work for me at school. I just wouldn't, it wasn't going to work for me.
You never thought about going to school or college or anything like that?
Totally thought about it, you know, but those were pipe dreams, I think, at the time. I kept being like, I'll just do it. I'll fucking apply and I'll get that student loan, you know what I mean? And like, I just kept not doing it, you know what I mean? And like,
I mean, you've obviously thought a lot about this kind of stuff, but the economic system that we're in, at least in the States, I guess there's probably some crossover with Canada.
We're not that different.
Where we're asking young people to take out these giant loans when they're 18 years old.
It's insane.
It's completely fucking insane.
That was the thing of it for me. Like, I couldn't justify as like, I guess I, now I could. I guess if you took out this loan and then you pay it off and you're a lawyer or whatever, it equals out. But that's not what people do. People take these stupid courses, you know what I mean?
And I could become poets.
Yeah, right? I'm going to pay 50 grand to be a poet. And it's like, you're going to make 30 bucks. Ever. You know what I mean?
Like, you might get a book club in like Lawrence, Kansas to be like, we love your collection.
Well, come on out, dude. And that's the best thing. But to me, that's really cool. You know what I mean? That's like one of the best things that's happened to me. Like, I'm here right now. Like, I'm a dumb little kid from fucking Canada, you know what I mean? So, like, it's been really interesting to me that I can go to New York City and, like, not as, like, a tourist necessarily. I get to hang out with people or, like, have, like, a real experience in the city necessarily, you know? Or, like, Los Angeles, I get to have a different experience. And, like, me and my wife were like, well, let's go stay at the Sheraton and see the fucking La Brea Tar Pits or whatever the fuck you're doing here, you know? So it's very different. I like that, you know?
Well, the literary community, if the work is good, I don't think anybody, it's kind of like that in the arts. No one gives a shit.
No, nobody's been like, maybe there are people like, fuck that guy and his no education. You know, I can see that. I would be that if I spent all that money and then like,
maybe
I wanted a book on Tyrant and he wouldn't fucking publish it or whatever. I might be a dick about it, you know?
Yeah, I guess, I mean, there's always going to be assholes somewhere, but I don't know. I feel like the literary community, like, it could always be better, but it's not as bad as many places.
Everybody I've met has been pretty nice.
Yeah.
I haven't had a really bad experience with anybody. It's usually, like, someone who doesn't write I'll have a bad experience with, you know?
Yeah. So you start to write this book. How long did it take you to write it?
Maybe 2 years. Just like...
Did you have a ritual?
Yeah, I was pretty good about that. I'm good at... I'm very ritualistic, I guess. Like, I get up at 6 in the morning, no matter what, to write before I go to work or whatever.
How long do you write?
A couple hours, you know? Try to get in as much... That's as much as I'm going to really do good work for, I think. And then it kind of... I notice it. It's like, these senses stink, you know? Just go have some breakfast and go to work, you know?
Yeah, it's over.
Yeah, so
let
when...
Go.
Yeah, so when I was writing the book, I was just like... I was like... I think it was on, like, when I first did my first draft, I was like, just write 2,000 words a day. And then, like, or just write a chapter every day, you know? Write a 2,000-word chapter.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Do you do it... do you type or do you write by hand?
I type. I'm not very great at it, but
on a computer?
Yeah. On a laptop, just like everybody else.
Who are some of your influences as an adult?
As an adult, like, yeah. What about, like, Celine would have been a big one, you know?
Me too.
Really?
I fucking love...
I love him. I can't get enough of it. His books are so good, dude.
Yeah.
I read Journey to the End of the Night. No, all of them. I love Rigadoon. I love North. I love Castle to Castle.
You do?
Fuck yeah. I love Guinal's Band. That one's good, too. They're okay. All good, man.
I've tried to read North and, like, I think, like, Death on the Installment Plan and Journey to the End of the Night.
Those are great. Those are amazing. But those last three are good. North by North, or the Castle to Castle and North. Those are amazing if you get past those. Because the first 100 pages are just, if each one is him shitting on the publishers, right? And like the French literary community, which I love, you know what I mean? But then once you get past that, it's like he's older. His style's calmed down and it's like really readable, you know? And it's less frantic. And I really like it. It's good. Plus, it's like he's in Germany, and the Nazis hate him, and France hates him. You know, everybody hates him. You know,
he's like an anti-Semite, though. He's like, you know, he did some sketchy things.
He did some sketchy things, you know, but we all do some fucking sketchy things. You know what I mean?
Like, maybe not that.
No, I've never been accused of treason or whatever. You know what I mean?
Well, but I also think, you know.
What's that, in Bagatelle is the one he wrote? It was like a diatribe against the Jews or whatever?
Well, but this is what's so confusing about him is that I feel like there's a lot of humanity, especially in those first two books. And I think a lot of people feel that way. It's like anti-war messages, anti-authority. Like, there's just a lot of warmth underneath all the darkness.
Yeah. They're not, those books aren't super racist by any means, I don't think either.
No, I haven't read them in a while, but I just remember both of them just sort of like blew me away.
Yeah, the first time I read like Journey to the End of the Night, I was like, that's it, man.
Yeah.
That's the one. He did it.
He said
he got it on... He fucking hit the nail on the head, man.
I think I read it right after 9/11.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like in a mood and I was like, this is it.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, because it's so good, man. I love his book. His work is so good, man.
Well, and he had the other thing, too, that complicates, you know, the way that I conceive of him. You know, he was really badly injured in the war.
Yeah.
His head, he had a bad head injury.
Yeah, because you see those, like, the interviews with him after the war when he's old. He doesn't look good, you know?
No. And he had a whistling, I want to say, like, in his head, like, in his ear.
Yeah, because that's what he talks about in Rigadoon.
Oh, he does, okay.
Yeah, because he gets bombed or whatever, right? He's in, like, I forget where it is. I'm not as familiar with those ones. But, like, yeah, there's, like, a really bad situation, and he gets, like, there's bombing, and he's, like, got a ringing in his ear or whatever. Because he's, like, trying, it's him and his wife and this actor and their cat. And they're trying to, like, get out of Nazi Germany or just try to get safe at the very end of the war, you know?
Yeah. Well, he, I want to say, was, like, one of the first. There's, like, a weird parallel. I want to say he was, like, one of the first French infantrymen to be wounded in World War I and get, like, a medal. And Hemingway was sort of the same. It was like he was like an ambulance driver for like 2 days.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then he got like shot up.
Doesn't E.E. Cummings do the same thing too? Wasn't he like, I'm
maybe.
Pretty sure. I don't know.
Then Celine and Hemingway, I want to say, died on the same day.
Did they really?
Or like a day or two apart.
That's cool.
I don't know. Just like weird symmetry.
Coincidences. The American and the French, right?
Yeah.
I'd prefer a French writer over an American most of the time though.
Well, and I also marvel, and I don't know if this is just a function of the, did you read the Ralph Manheim translations? Okay. Like, maybe it's just he's a great translator, but I'm like, that book was published, like, Journey, I want to say, was published in 32.
Yeah, something like that.
And it reads, like, so contemporary.
It's so modern, dude.
It's not dated at all. And
no.
I don't know if that's just because...
It's his style.
You think so?
100%. I think the worst thing is like that we do now as writers is write like 1960 or something like that. I think that the people fall prey to that. And I think Celine, he had it, man. He was light years ahead of everybody else.
Did you
light
ever do years. Any of the ellipsis? Like, I mean, I know there's some, but I mean, like, did you, like, I went through no. a phase where I was like, God, maybe that's what I should do.
There's Jimi Hendrix record with it in there too, eh?
With what?
Are You Experienced? There's like a, I think it's that one or another one, and there's like a, the, like linear notes, or there's like a poem inside of it, and it's all done in Celine, the ellipses, Celine style.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Was Jimi Hendrix influenced by Louis Ferdinand?
I don't know. Oh. I just saw it. It was at my buddy's place because he had the record, and I was like flipping through it, and I was like, oh, fuck, what a ripoff.
Yeah.
Like, but then, like, I don't think a lot of Hendrix fans might get that reference, you know?
Yeah, no. Those, it's like tempting. Those ellipses work.
It really did. I don't know, because he was about the tiny music or whatever, right? Because he thought that it was like the music in your head. That's what he wrote, you know? And I think that I try to do this something very similar.
Yeah. Well, there is like, but there's like, I feel like there are certain writers who are more musical in their approach. I was just talking to Duchaney about this. Maybe okay. not on the show, but like, he's a buddy of mine. We were talking, but like, is writing for you super musical?
I think so. I try to listen. There's a rhythm to it, you know? My book is, I think it's super rhythmic, you know, like I tried to like stick to something like that. And like, I like music a lot. I think I'm probably influenced by it a lot. I like the idea of like,
do you write to music?
Yeah, I'll listen to music when it's on when I write, but like really low and stuff that I will find like really unoffensive. Do you know what I mean? It can't be really like anything. I wouldn't listen to like heavy metal or anything. You know, it'd just be like stuff I probably wouldn't normally listen to. Like leisurely, do you know what I mean? Probably more folk or anything like that.
I can't have anybody singing at me unless it's like in a foreign language, because then I start.
Then you don't understand it. It doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, but if somebody's singing and I can understand them, then it winds up distracting me.
Yeah, that's definitely it. Because that's why I have it really low. I just have it like just enough so I can just hear it, so it's there. And I what I really like listening or like well like Indian music. I like to write to that a lot too.
Like sitar and stuff?
Yeah, like Ravi Shankar and shit like that. That's good to write to.
Okay. I've been listening to like these like science fiction movie soundtrack playlists.
I can see that as a theremin shit. Fucking woo-woo-woo-woo-woo-woo. I can listen to that.
Just like celestial.
Yeah. You
know? I want something. I want to feel like I'm in outer space or something.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah. Just like a wash of music.
Because there's probably music in outer space. We just don't hear it, I think. The hum of the universe.
Let's hope.
That's what I think I'm trying to tap into, the hum of the universe.
Yeah, that's good.
Is it? I don't know.
Yeah,
we'll see.
So 2 years, 6 a.m.
Yeah.
Caffeine.
Yeah, I smoke a lot of pot, too, when I'm writing.
In the morning?
Yeah.
You wake up, you wake and bake.
Yeah, I also work for a dude. Like, the guy I screen print for, he smokes a ton of dope, too. So when I get there, we smoke joints. Do you know what I mean? So if I show up stoned, no one's really going to notice. Do you know what I mean? And
right.
Like, I've done my job for long enough. Like, I could do it in my sleep. You know?
And yeah, but like, I think some people, you have to have the right biochemistry to be able to handle it. Like, I don't think I can function socially as well as some people.
I just think, I don't know. Like my wife said it last night. She's like, this is going to even you out when I finally smoked a joint, like, last night. You know what I mean? Because I think I'm too manic.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, too, is that, like, certain people, you know, different neurochemistry. You need different things to help you regulate.
Yeah.
Whether it's like, you know, some pharmaceutical or some, it's a good joint. Like, I get that.
I'd much rather take a joint than a pharmaceutical, though.
Yeah, me too.
I think even when doctors in the past have been like, well, they're like, it's like, oh, my back hurts. I'm like, well, we'll give you some opiates. It's like, you know what? I don't really want those.
Right.
Because that's a slippery slope. You know what I mean?
Like, well, smart. That's wise thinking, I think.
Yeah, right. Because then you got this, like, your dealer's right there, and he's real easy to get to. He's just a pharmacist. You know what I mean? It's too easy to, like, you know, everybody gets hooked on him, you know? If I want to do an opiate, I'll just go buy some on the street.
Yeah. And those, like, the pharmaceutical companies and these companies that have made billions of dollars on these things.
That's the thing, too. At the end of the day, like, do I, like, you know, just like, who's selling me pot? The Hells Angels? Do you know what I mean? So, like, I'd rather give them my money at this point because it's tax-free, you know? Like,
wait, you buy pot from the Hells Angels?
Everybody buys pot from the Hells Angels in Canada at the end of the day.
Really?
I would think so, yeah.
They own the market?
Quebec, definitely.
Or
the mafia.
Is weed legal in Quebec?
Weed is legal from coast to coast.
Dude. Oh, right. That's right. They legalized it
recently.
Yeah,
in October, yeah.
What do you think of Justin Trudeau?
You know, I don't... You know what? I'm not a politics guy. I couldn't care less. You know, does it change anything my day-to-day? No.
Okay.
Like, we had the same prime minister before him for, like, fucking 14 years almost. You know what I mean?
That's Stephen Harper? Or?
Yeah, something like that.
Well, yeah, I feel like just because we have Trump, like, I idealize Justin Trudeau, who's, like, this young, handsome.
For sure, of course.
Yeah.
And he's liberal, and he's, like... I think Americans usually do that to our politicians, because we have a lot of more liberal politicians. We're a more liberal country, I think, but, like... I would worry about politics more in Quebec if, like, some right-wing separatist party gets in. That's going to change my day-to-day.
Yeah.
The prime minister, it doesn't at all.
But they've been, like, there's been some agitating for that in Quebec, I've heard.
For sure, man. There was, like, the last time, like, since I've been there, the Parti Québécois got voted in, and someone tried to kill the lady at the fucking, at the inauguration thing, like, her victory speech thing, man, that night. Whoa. There was a shooting that night.
Jesus.
Yeah. It's like, the Anglophone, Francophone thing there is... It's dicey. Like, it can get pretty dicey.
Do you speak French?
Not enough that I would be like, yeah, I speak French, you know?
But enough to, like just deal with your life.
If it's necessary, I'll get by, you know what I mean? I can sell a t-shirt in French, and I can, like, order my dinner in French, but I'm not, like, not sitting in a cafe talking about my life, you know?
Right. No, yeah, I'm kind of the same way.
You know? Do you know French?
Un petit peu.
Do your neighbor speak French?
Why? I don't know.
I saw two ladies out there, and they were speaking French earlier.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
I was staring at him. My wife was like, they are scared of you, dude. But like, I was just like, I mean, we'll get in on this French conversation. Like,
who is this fisherman?
Yeah, exactly. He's infiltrated. He doesn't look like he's from L.A.
So you get this manuscript done 2 years in. Were you trying to publish excerpts of it as you were going?
Never once.
Okay. And as you were going, were you... becoming familiar with, like, the online lit world?
I was already pretty familiar with the online lit world. I just wasn't really participating in it necessarily.
Like, what were you a fan of?
Who was I reading that I liked? My first real, like, introduction that I really liked was Sam Pink. You know, I thought his stuff really sung to me, you know what I mean? Because he's got that loner aspect about it. And it's Chicago, which isn't very different from Toronto, I don't think, in the weather. And it's, you know, I could relate to that. And it's like... I got into, like, the Tyrant magazines, too. I was really into those because I thought he was putting out a lot of cool stuff. And, like, I don't know, just there's a lot of stuff out there, you know what I mean? I guess it was alt-lit when I first, like, got into online literature. That was the thing, was alt-lit. And it's just, like, I didn't fit in with that. So it was hard for me to make any inroads, you know what I mean? But once that died, I think, like...
What was it about alt-lit that didn't...
Didn't gel with me?
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is just so... Like, there's good writers and all that, don't get me wrong, but I think that the majority of it was just, like, really boring and, like, problems that I can't relate to. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, boo-hoo, I'm in college, my cat's sick or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, that style of shit. And it's like, well, you know, your life could be a lot worse. You know what I mean? I get that you don't have any food right now, but you could probably call your dad to get a fucking sandwich.
Right.
You know?
Right. The stakes aren't high enough.
They weren't high enough. They weren't gambling with enough for me. You know what I mean? I like to, like, throw it all away if you're going to do it, you know? That's why I always say I didn't take, like, a pseudonym or whatever, because if I wasn't going to throw away my name, I wasn't going to do it right, you know?
So you have to put on the page enough to, what, destroy your reputation?
Destroy myself, my reputation, my family, any chance of going home, stuff like that. You know, I mean, all my friends banned from, like, the village that I grew up in, you know, that kind of stuff.
Has there been any pushback or backlash?
No, but I don't think I'll probably ever see my dad again.
Really?
No.
Because of the book?
It's probably... I say that that's the final nail in the coffin there.
Yeah.
It's just deteriorated over the years. And, like, the last time I went home, I got a definite impression. I wasn't... Not from him, but, like, that I'm not a part of that family.
Really?
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah.
What about your sister?
My older sister? Yeah. We talk, but not enough. You know what I mean? It's just, like, we're so... I think it's the age thing and, like... We're really different now. Like, I'm this big city asshole, I guess, you know, to her, because she's this rural Canadian on a horse farm in southern Ontario, you know what I mean? So
right.
It's like, we don't have a lot in common anymore.
Well, do you ever write to them?
Yeah, you know, not as much as I should, you know what I mean? They're not really writers back.
That's okay. But, like, I mean, what the hell do I know? But at least it's like, I feel like letters...
At least you're still giving them something, you know? Like, I'll talk to my sister and I, like, I'll go home and visit her. Do you know what I mean? Like, her farm is, like, probably the most calm place I could ever be, I think, you know?
She raises horses?
She doesn't raise them. She just has, I don't know what raising, but, like, she, you know, she's always has a couple or, like, some little tiny horses or whatever. And her, like,
what do you mean, tiny horses?
Little horses. They're not ponies. They're miniature horses.
Oh, okay.
There's a difference. I didn't know.
Ride them?
No, dude. I'm the only one in my family who's not an equestrian. Really? Like, my dad was a cowboy before I was a kid, like, born.
Oh, really?
Like, he would go down to Tennessee and pick up horses and bring them back to Canada and try to sell them to, like, other, like, horse people, I guess, to, like, ride them English or cowboy style or Western style. And if not, they went to the glue factory or wherever you do with a horse you don't want, you know?
Like, they always say you destroy a horse. That seems like a strong verb.
Yeah, right. Because, well, I guess you do. You're breaking their spirit originally. You know what I mean? That's like, so sad.
We don't destroy any other animal.
No, we don't. We don't destroy dogs and cats.
No,
you know
you
what
destroy
I mean?
A horse.
A cat destroys you.
Right?
Right?
That's why I like cats. I wish I could have one. My wife is, like, terribly allergic.
Oh, yeah. We don't have any pets. I don't keep any.
You don't like any?
It's not that I don't like them. I kind of, like, we have an apartment. I feel bad for it. And, like, I don't really like city dogs.
Yeah.
Because it's like, okay, this fucking snowing out, and I got to put this dog little boots on to take him for a walk.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even like putting my boots on, you know? Like,
my sister was sending me pictures from Chicago. She lives when that polar vortex
right.
happened. Her dog is like, it got a coat on, and I'm just like...
It's nuts to me. And plus, like, the whole idea of a city dog, it's like, if you don't have a yard, it's like, well, okay, needs his exercise. I got to go take this guy for a walk, and I got to walk him down to the park, and I'm going to feel bad if he doesn't get his exercise.
I get up at dawn, take my dog for a walk.
Right? You got to.
Yeah, but
that's when I write.
It's good for me, too, but that's your writing.
He can't cut into that, you
no.
know? But a country dog, it's like, you open the door and kick him in the ass, and he's on his own. He's having a blast, you know?
So if your writing career takes off, your book starts selling like crazy...
Yeah.
You leave Montreal?
Yeah, in a heartbeat. I'd
go
get
South
some
America.
Hunter S. Thompson-style fucking fortified cottage in the woods, dude, in no time flat. That would be my goal.
And nobody would ever, like, nobody would be able to find you unless you wanted them to.
Yeah, probably not. That would be my best. That's actually the shittiest thing about having the book is I can't hide anymore. Because I've hidden for, like, since I left high school from, like, everybody I knew, I think, you know? Like, I don't have, like, a Facebook presence or anything like that.
But now people can Google you.
Now people, they hunt me down. Like, and it's like wildfire, you know? You come from a small town and you write a book and it's set in that small town. People are going to want to read it.
Yeah.
You know?
Curiosity.
Even if I sell, if I don't sell books anywhere else, I'll sell some back in that town, you know?
You keep weapons? Like, speaking of Hunter S. Thompson, are you, like, a gun guy?
It's Canada. It'd be very tough for me to keep guns. Like, I'd really have to, like... It's, you know, you have to take a course.
Oh, you do?
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, I remember watching, like, the Michael Moore gun movie. Remember mm-hmm. that one? Like, Bowling for Columbine?
Yeah.
But he went to Canada, and he's like, well, like...
He's in London, Ontario, in that fucking diner, right?
Probably.
And he's talking to, like, no, that was the one about, like, the medicine, I think.
I don't know.
Whatever.
But he goes to Canada. Basically, like, the point is that there are a lot of guns in Canada.
Yes, sir.
But there's not as much gun violence by a long shot.
It's just different people, I guess, maybe. It's hunting. We're hunting country.
Yeah.
All the guns are, like... But then Toronto's really violent. People get shot in fucking Montreal. People get shot everywhere. But it's just like our population is only like it's like less
it's
than
too
Calif-
cold.
It's less than California, dude. There's more people in California than there is in Canada.
Yeah.
So like it's that's a numbers so- game. That's why there's no violence. You know what I mean? Like you can always it's the apples and oranges.
Plus you're freezing fucking cold.
Yeah.
Like 7 months of the year.
You're not going you might think that would cause more gun violence.
No,
you
people
know
are inside.
Yeah, it is. That's what it is. You know what I mean? But, like, people just don't have guns. There's that Norm Macdonald thing where he's like, I love fist fighting, man, and I'll fist fight anybody in Canada, but in America, I don't do it.
Really?
Because people have guns here.
I had a... you mean Norm Macdonald, the comedian?
The one and only, yeah.
Okay, so when I have a Norm Macdonald story. I've told it, like, maybe once, but it was a long time
ago. Did you meet him?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, no, he totally fucked with me, too. I was, like, my wife and I... This is, like, before we had kids. And my book had just come out, and we were at this, like, mall. And there's, like, a Barnes & Noble. And, like, I would go in and, like, check on my book.
Okay, cool.
I was, like, visiting somebody at the hospital.
Yeah,
or something,
yeah, yeah.
You know?
Oh, God.
And I was like, there it is. It's doing okay.
Yeah.
Like, turn it face out. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
And I was in there, and, like, Norm Macdonald's there. And I'm like, oh, my God, there's Norm Macdonald. He's with his friends. He looks stoned. And my wife goes up to him. She's like, he just published a book. You know, she starts, like, plugging me.
Yeah,
I'm like,
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
like, no. You know, and Norm's like, that's cool, you know. And he's like, I'll buy your book. And he's like, sign it for me, man. Sign it for me. So I'm like, all right. So I'm signing this copy and shaking his hand. I was like, thanks, Norm. You know, we think you're funny and all this stuff. And leave. I'm like, I can't believe Norm Macdonald bought my book. And then, like, a month later, I'm back at that same mall or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I go in to check on my book. I pick up the copy off
it's
the shelf.
The one you signed for him.
It's
man.
The one I signed for.
That's amazing, dude. Ah, fuck this guy.
Yeah, right.
You know, like that's amazing.
And it's exactly the kind of thing that Norma would do.
100%. You know, yeah. I like that. That's a good story, dude.
So I'm like, I feel like. I don't know. It's like a badge of honor.
That totally is. I'd love to have Norm Macdonald fuck around with me. That'd be great, too.
Yeah. So you get this book done. Did you have your sights set on Tyrant? Did you have a relationship with Gion? Did you submit it through the like over the transom? Like, how did the publication process happen?
Well, I wrote a I did a few drafts of the book. I guess I'll start there, And I had a final one, and it looked more like a Noah Cicero novel with, like, the sentence graphs kind of style. So it was like a 200-page poem, I kind of felt.
What do you mean? Just, like, one sentence?
Yeah, exactly. It didn't have, like, that, like, the four-line paragraph kind of style that I ended up sticking with. So then I showed it to, like, Elizabeth Allen, and she literally said, there's no heart in this book. And I was like, oh, groan. So then I wrote it again, and I tried to put heart in it, you know?
How do you put heart in a book?
I don't know. I just was like, I'm going to fucking make this good. You know what I mean? You know, I just kind of was like, I'm going to abandon myself. I'm going to say all that shit that I shouldn't say that I'm like, you know, I'm like, that I think is like going to embarrass me, or maybe I don't want to admit to people, or may make me not look as cool or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, oh, that's the stuff. That's heart. You know what I mean? Everything that makes you look like a real person, you know?
I hear this story all the time. I hear
you talk to writers.
It resonates with me personally. Like, the stuff that we try so hard to avoid is like what the...
That's what people want.
That's what it needs to be.
That's why tabloid shit does so well. It's the fucking dirt, man.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'll just put in all the grime. So then after that was done...
How did you know Elizabeth?
She found me, dude. I mean, she found my Tumblr. Like, she's the first person. That's how I'm sitting here, because of Elizabeth Allen. That's, I'll say that.
Who
for sure.
has guested on this show twice, I
there
should say,
go.
To listeners.
So she found me on Tumblr once, and she was just like, can you reblog on Tumblr? I guess
yeah.
you can.
Yeah.
So
you retumble?
You retumble. So she retumbled me there. And then I just wrote her, and I was like, that's fucking cool, because that was the first time I'd had any interaction with someone who, like, some stuff I liked, you know? So then we just kind of struck up a friendship or whatever. And that's how I got, like, writing at Hobart, too, because I have a lot of stuff up there. So, yeah, so I showed it to her. She's like, no heart. I wrote it again. And then in that time, I kind of started going on Twitter. I hadn't really, like, I'd, you know, flirted with it before. So I was like, you know, Sam Pink was pretty keen on my stuff at that point. So I was like, he was like, somebody published something by this guy. So I was like, I'm going to make him put his money where his mouth is. So I write him up, and I'm like, you want to read my novel? And he's like, yeah, sure. So then he read it, and he was like, he got back to me pretty quick. And he's like, this is really good, dude. I'm going to send it to Lazy Fascist and then CCM as well. And they both said they'd get back to us in a month. And, like, neither of them did. So in that time, you know, Gene had started following my Twitter and liking my tweets, you know, and I had all this. I was, like, all fucking confident because Sam liked my book. And he was my go-to for that shit. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to DM Gian and be like, you want to read my book, dude? And he was like, yeah, sure. And I'll be like, I'll get back to you about this, you know? And then I was like fucking so ecstatic that he even said that. Like, that was probably more exciting to me than getting the actual book published. You know what I mean? The fact that he'd read it. Because I wanted, like, to me, it was like, oh, maybe if I write 2-3 books, maybe he'll notice me then. You know what I mean? I'll go like the Scott McClanahan route or whatever, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think, you know, that's how you do things. So he got back to me in a fucking day, dude, and was like, we want to publish this book. Just tell CCM to fuck off or whatever. And like, and then from there, that's how it happened, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like that sort of, like when good things happen, they usually happen fast.
When it comes,
you know, if there's a yes, it's usually quick. It's not usually like this lingering thing.
Yeah, you either know you like it or you don't right off the hop, I think. You know?
Yeah. So how long ago was this?
That was, 2 years ago. Yeah, I think he's had that book at least 2 years for sure.
And then you guys went through an editorial process together?
No. That's like the manuscript, basically.
Really?
Pretty much, yeah. If there's a comma in it, I think Gene added that and he changed the end a little bit. You know what I mean? It was probably a little bit longer.
Yeah.
But other than that, that's the manuscript I wrote, I think. He may have changed it a bit.
Yeah.
But not much.
So you really went through editorial process, like Elizabeth Allen, like that stage of the thing.
That's where you hit the gauge and you go over, you know what I mean, kind of thing. And it's like, that's where that book became like something, you know.
Once you put the dirt in.
Yeah, because it was there and I cut it all out probably because I was like, I'm going to like just slash, you know, kill your darlings or whatever. So I slashed the whole, like I had a bigger manuscript and I think I probably took out like 40,000 words.
How many words is your finished product?
Maybe, I think it sits around 90. Maybe.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty good for anybody.
Yeah.
I think I cut out a lot and then I just put in the rest, you know what I mean? When I just felt like I had to, I guess, you know?
Are you working on something new?
Yeah, I got another novel that I've already done, and I'm just like, I'm at that point where I need to put the heart in, you know? So I'm just kind of going over that.
You always put the heart in last?
Yeah. That's the easiest part to do it at.
Why?
It's easy to put the heart in. It's just just fits into the puzzle, you know? It's like putting puzzle pieces in. That's all the book is. The book writes itself, man. The story's there. That's super easy to do. So you just got to fill it up with, like, whatever isn't a story, you know what I mean? And then it's like the heart, you just drop in, man. There's just little fucking fragments that make, it's not a big thing putting heart into a novel. It's just you don't have to know how to do it or have to be willing to do it or be like.
So you're talking like thoughts, description of like your.
It could
character.
Be a line. It could be a paragraph. It could be a thought. It could, there's a lot of things that make, give a book heart. It's things that people fucking resonate with. Do you know what I mean? Or like, someone can be like, it's the same thing that makes a tweet really good probably is the same thing that gives a book heart, I think.
I have this theory that like really good tweets happen fast.
Oh yeah, man. You're not thinking about that
shit. If you think about a tweet, you're fucked.
No, as soon as that goes into your drafts, it's over.
It's over.
Right? Because you shouldn't draft the fucking shit. It's like you're taking a piss on the internet. You know what I mean? That's what Twitter is. You know, it's like, you know, that's how at least I try to look at it. Like, you know, because if I really think about it, and I try to write like some really nice tweet, nobody fucking cares. People want to be like, I fell down a flight of stairs, but in an interesting way or something stupid like that. Or they want me to make fun of somebody. You know what I mean? It's off the cuff. You know? But off the cuff's always better. You know, I think it's comedy works better that way too.
That's why I like Twitter. That's like funny. You know, it's like when people can quip.
Yeah, right. It's good, man. I don't know. I was so fucking against that shit because I'm older too. So I was like, it's the youngsters.
How old
you know?
Are you? Not that old.
39.
Yeah, 39.
It's old enough for me to complain about it. You know what I mean?
So yeah, you are qualified to complain.
Yeah, I'm not exactly. I'm no spring chicken anymore. So, but I was like, oh, these youngsters. And then I just got doing it and like, I'm pretty much a Twitter writer. Like, it wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for Twitter, you know?
Line by line.
Yeah, you know?
How many followers you got? You got a lot of followers?
No, like, fucking less than maybe 700.
Huh. That's still good. Triple digits.
I guess, you know? What does it mean, though? Those things come and go, like, fucking.
I think it's about quality of followers. Like, people who are following. It's, like, one thing to have, like, 6,000 followers. Like,
yeah, exactly.
How many people actually pay attention
to guy 86. I don't give a shit if you follow me, dude. Like, sorry for out there. But I'm like stoked when like another writer I like follows my thing. Like,
right.
You know, and I'm like, fuck yeah, dude. Or like if I can get like Noah Cicero to like one of my tweets, then it's like I won a little bit, you know?
Right.
But I don't, you know, who cares about Twitter, really? I mean,
so what's the new book about?
I call it my On the Road. Because it's like a road trip book where we don't go anywhere. But I don't like the relationship between Dean and Sal in that book. I don't think he did a good job on it, so I want to do a better job.
So what do you mean you don't go anywhere?
We don't go anywhere. We stay in one town.
But you're in the car?
No, not even.
Oh, okay.
It's more about the relationship between the two guys, I think.
Okay.
That's On the Road to me more.
Does it have a title?
Yeah, I call it Classic Shitheads.
Classic Shitheads.
Yeah.
Do you have it? Is Tyrant going to publish it? Or are you not that close?
I'm not showing it to him yet.
Oh, you haven't?
Okay. No, it's too good. Welfare was too good to show him. Do you know what I mean? So now I have to do a better job, you know?
Yeah, you got to bring it back up.
So it's like, it's a high watermark for me to hit. So I want to do better than that before I show it to him. You know what I mean? Like, I've had people be like, you should show it to him. This book is pretty much done. You know what I mean? But for me, it's not done. You know what I mean?
Maybe you should show it to Elizabeth again.
Yeah, you know, she has it. She won't read it. She's got too much on her plate. And I'm working on a nonfiction book, though, too.
Which is?
It's with my wife's uncle, and he's been abducted by aliens and has experiences with interdimensional beings on a weekly basis, pretty much, and he's had them since he was a kid. And he wants to write a book about it.
So wait, he gets abducted on a weekly basis, or he has experiences with interdimensional beings?
Like, he could be abducted one week, or he might, like, an interdimensional being might come into his room at night.
What do these interdimensional beings look like?
I have hundreds of photos. Like, hundreds, maybe more. They're like, it's
on your phone? Can I see?
No, they're all, I don't like showing them out, too, because it's fucked up. It's like.
He takes photos of them.
Yeah, he went and bought, like, a tree cam. So if you want to see deer and fucking bear at night or whatever, it's a motion sensor, high resolution, black and white night cam. So when he's sleeping, because this is when it happens, you know, like an alien, he says that like he sometimes gets vibrated up or down into another dimension, or like they come and there's one photo, like he's got like time-lapse photos of this thing coming up out of his hand and materializing, you know, or like stuff like there's a woman materializing in his bed.
Fucking A.
Yeah, it's cool.
Do they look like anything like the classic alien sketches or whatever?
He says that he does have experiences with greys for sure. Like, he's got a ton of stories with greys where he gets.
They're called greys?
Yeah. Well, that's what we would continue to make those grey alien, you know, like that alien autopsy style. That's a grey, right?
Okay. I didn't know there was like an official name for it.
Well, maybe they're not officially named that, but so he's got experiences with those. And then he also has experiences where he goes to other dimensions where it's very similar to Earth. But it's there's like little things, like maybe people can levitate. But he thinks what it is like the whole idea of this book is like that humanity is working towards an ascension to a higher reality. And we just keep going up to another dimension after we die. There's no death. That's what his idea is.
I'm kind of down with that.
I'm fucking super down with it, dude. And it's like, it's funny because he doesn't know anything about religion or anything. Like, he doesn't really follow that. And he's not a Christian. He hates it or whatever.
Did he do any drugs? Is he like,
no, not even. I was like, because some of them, I'm like, dude, that sounds like a salvia experience I had, you know? It's like, or like DMT experiences too. Like a lot of them. And he talks about elves and like the sound of the bees. It's like the buzzing that people talk about and like fractals and shit. So, I don't even know where I was going with this now.
Well, that's
going
to be your nonfiction book.
That'll be a nonfiction book I'm working on right now, yeah.
Damn, okay, well, you're a busy guy.
Yeah, I try to be, you know.
Well, it's good to meet you. Congratulations on welfare. Congrats on the great Washington Post review.
Oh, that was cool, eh?
Hey, not bad for a debut novel.
Yeah, my ugly mug in there? Fuck, take that, pop. no, thanks for having me, dude. This was fun.
Yeah, best of luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, that is Steve Anwell. His novel is called Welfare. It's available now from Tyrant Books. You can follow Steve on Twitter. His handle is @OneLoveAsshole. @OneLoveAsshole. You can check out his book at nytyrant.com. That's the website for Tyrant Books. Steve Anwell, and the novel, one more time, is called Welfare. Thanks to Kill Rock Stars and the band Stereo Total, as always, for the theme song music. Thank you to Tiger in My Tank for the interstitial music. Thank you to Bloomsbury and Long Live the Tribe of Fatherless Girls by T. Kira Madden for sponsoring today's episode. If you would like to support this podcast, just go to patreon.com/otherpplpod. Don't forget about the free Other People app. If you would like to email me, the address is letters@otherppl.com. What else? The website for this show, otherppl.com. You can follow the show on Twitter @otherppl, etc. Next week on the program, who do I have coming up? Ooh, I got a good one next week. Roger McNamee, who wrote a book called Zucked about Facebook. Roger McNamee was one of Mark Zuckerberg's mentors in the early days of Facebook, and he was also an early investor in Facebook. And Roger McNamee is also partners with Bono in an investment fund called Elevation. So that's a very fascinating conversation. Stay tuned for that. Roger McNamee next week, right here on the Other People podcast. Delete your Facebook.